You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
We've got a science man, a man of science, Mr. Jeremy De Brul here is coming here to Corridor about his talk tomorrow about using viruses to solve the antibiotic crisis. Good morning, Jeremy. How are you?
Kia ora. Good morning. I'm good.
Yeah. Very glad to have you on the program, man. It's lovely having you here.
So it's having the opportunity to chat, you know, on the radio and introducing the talk for tomorrow at Umbrellos as well.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully, thirst for knowledge.
Yeah, thirst for knowledge. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll have people learn a bit about antibiotic crisis this morning and how we can fight it.
No, that's the goal. Before we get into that, did you do any skating over the weekend? No, you're an avid skater.
Oh, a lot of surfing.
Yeah. That's
so
great.
Water skating, if you want to call it that way.
Your body doesn't mind the cold?
No, it's all right.
You've gotten used to it?
Yeah.
Very used to it.
You have to, right?
Yeah, no, very true. Very fair. Now, I guess the first question is antibiotic resistance, of course, is bacteria that are developing resistance to antibiotic drugs like penicillin. How did it get so high, and what is the present danger that's posed by, superbug bacteria?
Yeah, right. So antibiotics have been around for about a century. And we've been using them more and more because they're actually a very efficient way to cure diseases. The issue is we've been overusing them. Sometimes we didn't need to. For example, we give a lot of antibiotics to our livestock. Not because they're sick, but because antibiotics make them grow faster, bigger, and fatter, increasing the financial outcomes and making the food grow, obviously, faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first reason. The second reason is doctors have also been over-prescribing antibiotics, sometimes for a virus, which doesn't have any effect on it.
Yeah.
And a combination of that together, so many antibiotics in the environment over like the last 50 and 60 years, have exposed these bacteria to such a pressure that they had no choice but to cope with it and evolve resistance.
Mm.
So today's situation is quite critical. We think that about 1.5 million people die every year for antibiotic resistance.
A million and a half. Really?
So that's as much as many people that die with diabetes, more than the number of death with tuberculosis. But the predictions are grim, actually. Cancer kills about 8 million people every year. We think that in 25 years, in 2050, antimicrobial resistance will kill about 10 million people every year. So that's people we can't treat. That's people that we know will be doomed because no treatment work anymore.
Are most of these superbugs, are they mostly respiratory kind of viruses or bugs? Sorry, are they mostly respiratory bugs?
Oh, it's very diverse, actually.
They're very, very diverse.
Yeah, so,
okay,
you've
so that's even worse.
Yeah, you've got enteric bugs in your stomach, like Escherichia coli. When you've got food poisoning, you can have infected ones when you cut yourself with a knife. Or like, like some kind of plants.
Yeah. So if we are going back to the 1800s, in a way.
That's what people say. People say we're actually going back in the 1900s where you could just cut yourself and the next morning gets infected and in a week you're out.
Well, the good thing is that bacteriophages, little viruses that eat bacteria, that's what we're talking about today, they might be a solution. And I've heard them be likened to like a precise missile that only targets one kind of bacteria. How do bacteriophages eliminate bacteria, and what do they do in our system when the bacteria they're targeting is gone?
Yeah, so I think to understand how to target bacteria, you need to kind of visualize what they look like. So remember that Apollo mission when they went into the moon and had this like very weird looking spacecraft? It looked a bit like a big head at the top, and then a little neck and then a lot of legs at the bottom. And that's kind of what they look like. They look like aliens in
they're
the
very
spaceships.
Strange.
Yeah, they're very strange. And people said, oh, they're actually very scary as well.
Yeah.
But what works, how that works is they float around in the environment, and with their legs they will come in contact with the bacteria, recognize a certain receptor, a certain motif on the bacteria. From there, they will be bound to it. They will inject their DNA into the bacteria, and they will actually take over the bacterial body, if you want, and make copies of themselves. So they will go over tens and hundreds of copies, and once the number of copies reaches
critical mass,
the pressure on the bacteria is so big that it just blows up.
Man.
It releases hundreds of these viruses.
And they go out
that can go
more.
On and target all the bacteria.
So that's I mean, I heard it was likened to a precise missile. So they know the bacteria they're hunting. It's just one thing.
Yes. So that is a good thing because then, you know, antibiotics have a tendency to wipe out all of the bacteria, even the good ones.
Carte blanche, yeah.
Phage, instead, only target the ones that you want them to target. Mm-hmm. The problem, though, being that for a therapy, it makes it pretty hard because the treatment has to be tailored to the specific bacteria you have.
Mm.
Some people infected in Dunedin may not respond to the same treatment if they were infected in Christchurch.
Mm. Yep. That is tricky.
Yeah.
That is real tricky.
It can be.
Now, I guess I want to touch on the kind of history of bacteriophages because they were found to have potent antibacterial applications in the 1910s and 1920s in Britain, France, and Soviet Georgia. Of course, the country. But they kind of dropped off the radar in the West with the discovery of antibiotics. Now, why is this?
Yeah. So, well, the discovery of antibiotics was a big...
It was revolutionary.
Sorry?
It was revolutionary.
Yeah, it was revolutionary. It put a very big break to phage therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But the other reason why it dropped is, well, as we just said before, the tailored medicine, so it can be used as widely as antibiotics.
Mm.
There is also some regulations. We're dealing with things that replicate. You know, antibiotics, you make the compound, give it to the people, and it's always the same for decades and decades. Viruses changes. So the one that you work with today will be different from the one that you work with tomorrow.
Mm.
How do you conduct clinical trials when the thing that you start with is not the same the next day?
Yeah.
It's a bit hard.
Yeah.
And the fact that they evolve as well and that they change and they're not the same over the course of time makes it difficult to write down patents.
Mm.
If you want to fill up a patent to get financial incentive, how do you do when, you know, you sign up a patent for phage A, but in a few days it will actually be phage B because it's evolved.
So they evolve that fast?
Oh, yeah. They replicate like, you know, we think that phages kill 30 to 40% of the bacterial population in the ocean every day.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're talking about trillions and trillions of new phages every single day.
Mm-hmm. It's a massive arms race and a massive war.
It
one that we can't really comprehend the size
it's
of.
The biggest killer on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thankfully not targeting us. But I did read that apparently in the Eastern Bloc, in the Russian kind of sphere, they were researching with phages for quite a while.
Yeah.
But I think in the West, we just got kind of like really tunnel visioned on antibiotics is what it sounds like.
Yeah, well, the regulations don't help.
And the regulations.
Yeah. But so the main thing is the East, like Russia and Georgia, back in the time where antibiotics were developed, were lagging behind. Mm. You know, the knowledge was not passing through countries so easily because of the
political situation.
And so they had phages and it worked for them, but they didn't have any antibiotics. So they kept using phages. They kept building institutes, mass producing phages, giving them prophylactically, putting them in waterways of the cities to clean it up.
Wow.
Yeah, it went very far. And so that's why they kind of kept it throughout the years. And now in Georgia, we've got a massive institute that receives thousands of people every year that are suffering from multidrug resistant infection, and they actually cure them.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're really ahead of the curve.
They are on the top of the therapy scheme.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
We're on the Western side, like, really,
yeah, totally. What are some of the current uses of viruses in you know, fighting bacterial infections, and how successful have they been?
Why? Right, so we've
for targeting superbugs.
Yeah, so I guess in the East, like Russia and Georgia, you can get viruses off the counter when you go to a pharmacy.
Yeah.
Instead of antibiotics, you just ask for a vial of viruses because your tummy feel a bit funny.
Mm-hmm.
In Poland and Belgium, doctors can actually prescribe them.
Mm.
So it's not available at the counter, but you can prescribe them. And so far, on the West, it's only been used for very complicated cases where people were on the brink of death. No other therapy were working.
Mm.
But all the cases that we have documented, or most of the cases that we have documented, have shown very dramatic effects on the good side.
Yeah. Okay, let's get that.
Yeah,
they've been really bad.
No, dramatic on the good side. So terrific effects. And people can actually be suffering for, you know, when you've got diabetes, you can have a lot of ulcers and infections that go on, or like when you've got surgery and you've got infections inside after the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And the phages that have been used against this kind of infection have shown very, very good outcomes.
Okay.
People would like be sick for months and needing repeated surgery to clear out the infection, and then would give them phages for maybe a week. or maybe a few weeks, and they would completely recover.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that is, this is a real game changer here.
It is a game changer. There's a, there's a nice book that people can look into if they want to, which is which was written by Stephanie Threddy, mm-hmm. and her husband was sick, got sick in Egypt, and she actually describes how she went on to find the perfect phage therapy cure for her husband because he was in a coma for a month at a time.
Wow.
And he was really going to, you know, pass.
Mm.
But she managed to find a cure using, or receiving help from the U.S. Army. Receiving,
wow.
Yes, receiving help from...
the one good thing they've done.
Receiving help from different scientists around Australia as well to, like, find the right phages for that guy.
Wow, that's so fascinating. Now, you know, antibiotic resistance has grown, as we've mentioned. Bacteria are becoming immune to their effects. Is there a possibility that bacteria could become resistant to viruses?
Evolution, eh? Yeah, yeah, of course. Antibiotics, you know, was... Oh, and the resistance to antibiotics evolved pretty quickly.
Mm.
And so, for viruses, it's kind of the same. You know, it can evolve quite quickly as well. So the receptors that we've talked about, they're really needed for these viruses to attach, recognize, and infect.
Mm-hmm.
An easy way for the phages not to be able to infect anymore is remove these receptors or mutate these receptors.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is resistance happening. Even if I went out in the lab, so today I will go back in the lab,
mm-hmm.
I will grow phage overnight, and the next morning when I wake up and I go to the lab, I will see resistance already.
Mm.
So we'll see bacteria resisting the phage. Mm. But there's ways we can counter this resistance. So we can use what we call phage cocktails.
Mm.
So this
is
mixing together a few phages, maybe three or four. So the likelihood of that bacteria mutating, changing, or removing that receptor is very low on all four at the same times.
Mm.
So even if one fails when you give the treatment, a couple of others in the same treatment will take over and keep killing the bacteria.
Wow. That's awesome. So there's multiple different phages that target the same bacteria.
That's what we're aiming for at the moment. Yeah. So in the past, they were using mostly one phage, but now because we know about resistance, we use many different phages, which binds to different receptors,
mm-hmm.
so different keys, if
mm-hmm.
you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so that improves the efficiency and limits the emergence of resistance.
That's great. And also, even if... A bacteria does grow resistant to the phages, right? They'll have to kind of trade off some of their antibiotic resistance. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's what we've seen, actually. You know, in life, nothing comes for free, right?
Mm.
If you're a long-distance runner, you're going to have a hard time doing weightlifting.
Mm.
If you're a weightlifter, you're going to have a hard time running 100 miles rails.
Mm-hmm.
100 miles races. And so what we've shown is, yes, bacteria becomes resistant to antibiotics, and one of the way they can do it is by pumping out the antibiotic of the system before the antibiotics can act, literally
mm-hmm.
with a pump that
mm-hmm.
goes like, you know, like a water pump, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And phages, when we use them on these bacteria, need that pump as a receptor. If that pump is not here, they can't infect the bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about it from a bacterial point of view, the phage exerts a very high pressure. So I could potentially remove that pump if I'm a bacteria, so the phage can't infect anymore. But now people will give me antibiotics, and antibiotics go in the system. That pump is not here anymore, so they can't come out.
So they bug it either way.
Yeah. So we've kind of reversed the susceptibility to antibiotics using phages. That's one of the ways we can use them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always work like that,
mm-hmm.
but that's one of the applications.
Awesome. That's so exciting, man. It's really exciting. And it's cool that there's research happening here at the University of Otago on virophages. Is there some stuff that you can talk about, you can comment about?
Some stuff that you might be talking about tomorrow? In very, very broad details. So New Zealand, obviously, you know, it's not well advanced in therapy. It's kind of on the same page as the Western countries.
Mm-hmm.
But we do try and implement phage therapy here, especially in agriculture,
mm-hmm.
because it's much easier. You're not dealing with humans, you're dealing with plants.
Yeah.
You know? If the plant dies from the treatment, it's all good.
Yeah.
So the lab actually is developing some therapies for kiwi fruits and cherries, because some of the pathogens in these orchards in central Otago are devastating
mm-hmm.
on the crop yield and the financial outcomes for the farmers.
Yeah.
So some research has been done, especially on the kiwi fruit at the moment. And the first trials have shown very good promise.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. I guess that's, we'll leave that there because you can't comment too much on the kind of specifics for certain reasons. The last question I have is about science communication, because, you know, the idea of getting jabbed by a vaccine has become a huge point of contention in the kind of public health discourse as at the moment. And I wonder, with the increased use of bacteriophages in medical science, will that require more science communication around how they work, so people feel comfortable letting a virus into their bodies?
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it with a vaccine during COVID-19, and it wasn't even something alive. It was just...
It was inert,
It was just, inert. And people have been very skeptical about it. And so using viruses that actually will go on and replicate within you might, you know, push people back a little bit, and they might feel scared about it. They might feel like they can't control it. And so science communication will be a big part of this. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of TED Talks about phage therapy that you can go and listen to like, get familiar with it. But we actually also, some of the people in the lab are running surveys around New Zealand, around Dunedin, to understand what do people think about phage therapy?
Yeah.
And one thing that came up is, you know, eventually when all the antibiotics have failed and you're in the hospital on your deathbed and we come to you and we're like, do you want phage therapy or do you not want it?
Yeah.
Well, some of these principles kind of get dropped because it's your only options, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be great to include phage therapy, you know, in different papers at uni and touching, like, you know, at schools and maybe some museum expositions about it. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of room for it, and we do need it.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I think we'll leave that chat there. If you want to go see Jeremy talk about bacteriophages, you can go do that tomorrow at Umbrellas at 5:15. 5:30.
Starting, yep.
5:30. Well, that'll be an awesome chat. Thank you for coming on the program, man.
Cheers, Dad.
I really appreciate it. I love nerding out about science stuff. It's awesome. Here on the program, we're going to have Astarungu with Vic, and then we're going to launch into another edition of Quizzle Me This. Are there any final words you'd like to leave our listeners with there, Jeremy?
Well, you know, big hops on viruses. And, yeah, it's not because they're small and you can't see them, or that they are known to sometimes cause disease, that they can't be, you know, on our side and fighting with us rather than against us.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. That's beautiful. That's poetry.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.